We've been doing a series called The Good Book, talking about significant things in Scripture. So all of it's significant, but some of the most significant things in Scripture. And we just got through the Old Testament. Last week we started on the New Testament. And today we're going to pick up Matthew in the next 3 weeks. We'll look at the Sermon on the Mount. How many of you ever heard of the Sermon on the Mount? Let me see your hand. Yeah, and so just so much significant stuff. So if you would, open up your Bibles to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, if you're still learning your way around the Bible, there's an Old Testament, and it starts with Genesis, and a New Testament, and it starts with Matthew. And Matthew was actually a follower of Jesus. He wrote this. He was an eyewitness to what took place with Jesus in his ministry. Matthew wasn't always a person that you would look at and think that Matthew was godly or whatever, but he had this encounter with Jesus, and Jesus called him to a higher place. He called him to walk with him. And so it changed Matthew's story, and he left everything he knew and began to be a follower of Jesus, where he writes this eyewitness account of him as a follower. Also, let me say this. One of the things we're encouraging people to do, just because it's a way to just stay connected with people and that type of thing, share, you know, we do this on Facebook, share it. Share it, you know, on all your social media. It enables people to connect with us, and to those that are watching on social media, we want to say thanks for being a part. So the title of this message today is, What Does Jesus Want? Now, I'm going to tell you that today's message is kind of hard. It's one of those things that's very challenging. And I want you to imagine that it's not some guy preaching to you, but I want you to imagine that Jesus is, you and him are taking a walk, and he wants to talk to us about some things. This is not one of those messages where I'm saying, hey, you guys need to do this. I hope I never do that, actually. Hey, you guys need to do this. But this is not about you, but it's about us. Well, you know, what God's called us to, what he's called us to. What does Jesus want me to know? So in Matthew chapter 5, we'll start with verse 11, and it says this, Jesus said this, he said, God blesses you when people mock you and persecute you and lie about you and say all sorts of evil things against you because you are my followers. So, I mean, you know, in this part right here, he's kind of letting us know what we can expect as we begin to follow him, that there'll be some people that don't appreciate it or don't understand it. Now, the truth of the matter is, still in our country, we have it way better than other people do, some of our other brothers and sisters all in different parts of the world. You know, a lot of times persecution here is, you know, people saying things about us on social media or whatever, or just different things like that, or maybe somebody giving us a hard time, or maybe facing some, you know, workplace persecution, that kind of thing. But, you know, in other parts of the world, I mean, you know, your life is at stake. And so thankfully, you know, we're in a place where that's not the case with us yet. And so, but Jesus said, when that happens, that God, there's a blessing that God places on your life. He goes on to say, be happy about it. Be very glad. Now, my mind doesn't think that way. My mind doesn't think, hey, they're giving me a hard time. This is so much fun. I'm just so happy about this. No, man, my mind goes back to old school and like, oh, you want to do it? That's where we're going with this? Let's rodeo. I mean, that's where my mind goes right there, you know? And so, but that's what Jesus said to do, right? He said, be happy. He said, be very glad for great reward. Everybody say great reward. Not a little reward, a great reward awaits you in heaven. And remember, the ancient prophets were persecuted in the same way. You are the salt of the earth. But what good is salt if it's lost its flavor? Can you make it salty again? It will be, you know, the salty he's using is different than some of the salty that you guys are during the week. Like if somebody said to you this week, hey, you're being pretty salty right now, don't think that's what Jesus told me to be. No, it's probably not a compliment, okay? So if they say, if somebody says, you're being kind of salty, say, like the way Jesus wants me to be or the other way? You know, so ask that question. So he said, but what good is salt if it's lost its flavor? Can you make it salty again? It will be thrown out and trampled underfoot as worthless. You are the light of the world, like a city on a hilltop that cannot be hidden. So the first example he gives of that is a city on a hilltop that cannot be hidden. No one lights a lamp and then puts it under a basket. Instead, a lamp is placed on a stand where it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, in other words, just like those things, their lights shine in the same way, let your good deeds shine out for all to see so that everyone will praise your heavenly Father. Now, let me just take a moment here. You know, Jesus, he says something else here later on where he talks about the fact that when we give and that type of thing, we shouldn't let our right hand know what our left hand is doing. But to understand this, that what he's dealing with is the motive. In other words, are you doing that so people will think, man, look at them, aren't they really just spiritual? If that's our motive, it's all wrong. But if our motive is do we want our giving to point towards the goodness of God, then he says when we do that, that is one of those things how we serve and those kind of things, that if it points towards God, then we're in the right direction. One of the reasons why part of our vision is to be relentlessly good to our community is because I don't think the church was intended to be passive, sitting in a corner just waiting till we all die and go to heaven. I think while we're here, Jesus even said this about the church, that the gates of hell will not prevail against it. In other words, that the church is moving. You can't stop the church. It's what God's called us to do. And the church is not this building. It's a place where the church meets. When we leave, we go out and we're still being the church as we leave this place. I didn't say that in the first service for whatever reason. Somebody needed to hear that in here, so there you go. So anyway, so in all of this, Jesus is telling us, he's talking about when we're persecuted, he's talking about the fact that we're not called just to blend in. Think about this in context, that many of the people that he was talking to when he said, look man, you're the salt of the earth. In other words, you're called to make a difference, to be an influence, to make a change. I say this, we're called to thermostat Christianity. Thermostats, they don't just identify the culture, the environment, they change it. Some people are happy being thermometer Christians, where they just like, all they can do is just identify and call it that, and then go home and not have any impact. But that's not who we're called to be. He said we're called to be salt. And so, again, think about the influence, or about the whatever the resources that the group of people, most of them had no religious influence. Matter of fact, the religion that they were connected with at that time viewed them as outcasts and didn't like Jesus. And then Rome was occupying the place they were, so they had no political influence. They had no military influence. Most of them had no economic influence. And Jesus was even telling them, in spite of not having many of the things that the world would say, you need this in order to make a difference, that he said, you as a follower of Jesus can make a difference just by following him. And so we're called to be salt and doing that and making a difference and how it changes. You know, my wife, she likes her French fries hot. And so she would do this. When we go to McDonald's, she would say, tell them I want fresh fries. I'm like, this is fast food. This isn't, we're not at Fleming's Steakhouse. I mean, so there's some 17-year-old just trying to make their, and I'm supposed to tell them, could you make me fresh hot fries? And so she's, just do it. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I would go in and I would do that. But the but the reason why is because she would say, I don't want them salted. I don't want them salted. And so she knew they'd have to make fresh French fries to do that. She would salt them herself when she got them because she knew that without salt, those fries wouldn't taste like they were supposed to. Well, and so I had to go a long way to use a McDonald's reference to get us where we're at now. But anyway, but the thing about it is that's who we're called to be. We're called to be that place that when we're following Jesus, that the impact that it has on those around us is noticed. It's noticeable. And then he said, we're called to be the light of the world. Well, Pastor Rick, the circumstances by which I was born, I wasn't expected. They thought I was a mistake. All sorts of labels that can be put on who we are that the enemy would use to try to limit the influence that you can have as a Christ follower cannot be found in the opinions of other people. But it can be found in the opinion of God's word as to who you were called to be. And so imagine that Jesus is walking with you and he says, I want you to be the salt of the earth. I want you to be the light of the world. And he gave two examples. One is a city on a hill. And back then cities were used as points of reference for direction. Like if somebody says, hey, I need to go to this place. And they go, in the evening they say, that city over there with all those lights, head that direction. It'll get you to where you want to be. And Jesus said, that's who we should be. That the light that we walk in should be one of those things that people are like, I just need to find the truth. I just want to know what God's like. And if there is a God, to be able to look at our lives and somebody goes, follow them and see what they do. Are they perfect? No. But they follow Jesus. And then he said it's like a light in a room. And so, that means that not only that can we be a sign that shows people the way, but also that people around us, can we give light to those in the house? It's like, this is how we're called to live our lives. And again, not because we're perfect, but because we endeavor to follow him. And so Jesus talks about all of that when you're persecuted, rejoice. You know, be salt, even though you don't feel like you can have any influence. Be light, you know, and those kind of things. Even if you feel like, you know, just, you know, imperfect or you know, just not worthy, any of those things, that push aside all of those things and be salt and be light and follow me. And so in all of that, if you're taking notes, here's the very first thing. What Jesus was telling them as he enters into, he just done the Beatitudes and now he's entering into this, that he wants us to know this. Following him is hard. It requires us to lay down our own desires, our own things. Now I've said this before about marriage. I said, you know, marriage, one of the first things people need to understand is that marriage is hard. But it doesn't mean marriage isn't good. I know that with Tina and I, that we got to a place, you know, we were so different when we got married, and we didn't know that. And then we get married, and you're like, oh man, you're like way different than you were when we were single. And she's like, I don't even know you, you know. And so you have those moments and those things, but as time went on, we got to a place where it's like, hey, the question is not, are we going to be married? We're going to be married. The question is, what kind of marriage are we going to have? And so we pushed through the hard, through those things where now I can't imagine my life without her. So just because things are hard doesn't mean they're not good. Following Jesus, even though it's hard, hard on my flesh, hard on what I want to do, hard on what I would just instinctively do in my flesh and that type of thing, doesn't mean it's not good. That he's called us to a different place. He's called us, you know, he's called us as followers of him to be lights to the world. If anybody's ever told you that you don't matter, you know, most of us, you know, spend a lot of our life in anonymity. And I mean, in other words, people don't, you know, crowds don't recognize us or anything like that. We're kind of unnoticed. And so the devil will use that to think, well, you really don't matter. You don't have any influence. That's not what Jesus said. He said, follow him, and following him will carry you out of anonymity, where you become salt to those around you and you become light to those around you. And even sometimes you'll get noticed to the point that it makes people uncomfortable and they'll criticize you. And he said, when that happens, there's a blessing waiting for you, that God has something for you in heaven. It's a great blessing. And so number one is this. Jesus was saying, what does Jesus want? He wants you to know that following him is hard. There's a laying down of our life and going after him. And pursuing him. So let's go to number two. Go with me. We're still there in Matthew. Skip down to verse 21. So Jesus was talking, and again he said this, you've heard that our ancestors were told. Now I think in the King James it says something like this, it's been said, or you've been told. In other words, he's confronting what they've been told in the past. He's confronting the things that they thought. And he says this phrase is used like several times. This isn't the only place that it's used. He said, you've heard that our ancestors were told you must not murder. If you commit murder, you're subject to judgment. But I say if you're even angry with someone, you're subject to judgment. If you call someone an idiot, you're in danger of being brought before the court. And if you curse someone, you're in danger of the fires of hell. So he was challenging them with each one of those things. He said, look, you know that it's not just about whether or not you kill somebody. But he said, how you feel about him in your heart, that if we let anger just kind of simmer in there, we're like, well, I would never physically hurt them, and we think we're okay, but to just let that resentment just kind of simmer there, that's not what he's called us to. And if he was walking with us, he would say, look, I want to talk to you about this now. I've not called you to just not do that. I want to talk to you about your heart and what's going on in there. He went on to talk about later on about adultery and different things like that. One of the things he said was, he said, you've heard, or it's been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And I've discovered that in so many of our relationships that we operate by that principle. And literally not, hey, you know, I'm going to take your eye. But I mean, we respond in kind to how we're treated. And that he's called us to something higher and greater. He said, yet I say to you, in other words, you've been told this, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, yet I say to you, if somebody smites you on one cheek, offer them the other. Later on, he deals with this situation that in their culture in that day, because they were occupied by Rome, one of the rules of Rome is that the military, if you were a non-citizen, they could come up to you at any time, no matter what's going on in your life, and the soldiers could ask you to carry their backpack. and to say, carry this for a mile. And by law, you would have to do that. You would have to drop whatever you're doing and stop that. I know for me as a man, my flesh, it would be like humiliating. I would want to fight that. And so you can imagine when Jesus begins to talk about that, in the culture of that time, people were thinking that he had been sent to deliver, you know, the weight of Rome off of their soldiers, off of their shoulders. And he wasn't there to deliver them from the bondage of Rome. He was there to deliver us from the bondage of sin. And so you can imagine them leaning in. Yeah, what do you want me to do, Jesus? When they do that, he goes, don't carry it a mile. Yes, that's right. Carry it two. Oh, are we going to church next week? I mean, again, it's just grace, as good as it is, it's such a great thing that God came to us. Jesus came not because we had anything that he needed. And so it's free, and then on the other hand, it calls us to a different walk. And so in this, that one of the things that Jesus wants us to know is that he wants to challenge the status quo in our life. The things that we were told as we were being brought up, even by people that love us sometimes, that just because they love us doesn't mean that they're right. The thing that culture gives the rubber stamp on and today says, hey, that's okay. And so we look at that and we look at that for direction. And yet culture is such a horrible compass. When you study the history of humanity, the things that human culture would allow over history, there are things I could share with you, and you say, well, everybody else says this is okay. Well, 100 years ago, everybody else said this was okay. Are you okay with that? Oh, no, that's horrible. Well, you'd have been okay with it then if that's your compass today. But the Word of God is unchanging. It's the same. It gives the same direction now that it did 2,000 years ago. I know in my marriage, if I want a good marriage, I love my wife the way Christ loved the church. That applies now, and 100 years from now, it'll apply. It's unchanging. That as a parent, I'm called to endeavor to raise my kids in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, all of these instructions he gives to us, and let's just be honest, none of us are perfect. So again, this isn't me saying, hey, you need to do this. This is me talking to us, imagining that Jesus is having this conversation with all of us. And so he wants to challenge the things in our lives that we've heard and we've made the rules in which we live by. Well, I just write people off. Is that what you're called to do? Nobody's going to talk to me that way. They can no longer be in my life. Maybe. I remember when I was a kid, you know, my dad, I'm grateful. He took me to church. He loved me. And again, he was a factory worker. And so there was a toughness about him and that kind of thing. And I remember when I was a little kid and my buddy next door to me, he and I were the same age. His cousin came over and he was 2 or 3 years older than us. He was kind of a bully and he kept messing with me. And so I squared up and it was not good for the Burke family that day. And so, his size and weight, we're in two different categories. And so it ended pretty quick. Well, I come home and my dad's standing on the porch and he saw what happened. And his response was like, hey, come here. His response was like, go back down there. And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, why don't you go down there and fight him, you know? And so I don't know what you saw that you think there'll be a different outcome than what there was. It didn't last long. And, you know, and his mind was like, grab something, get a 2x4, you know, pop bottle. I mean, he's going Old Testament Christian on him real quick. And so I was kind of raised with that. And I remember one day, you know, it just sounded so good to me. I told my boys, I said, look, when they were little, I said, look, man, I said, I don't want you picking fights, but I'll tell you what, if somebody wants to fight and they start a fight, you better finish it. And I remember Daniel looked at me and he goes, is that what Jesus wants? And I'm like, he's not here right now, I am. And so, but I mean, you know, some of those are questions like, they're hard questions, right? Because I am a believer in, like, you know, protecting our family, defending our family, those kind of things. And yet we have these other things that are a challenge to us in our walk with him. And so Jesus wants us to look at those things and say, hey, I know you think this, I know you know this, I know you've been told this, but is this what I'm calling you to? And some of those things are real clear, and some of them, man, we have to work through, right? I mean, they're challenging to our walk, but Jesus didn't come to just kind of say, hey, everything's good, everything's okay, and then skip down the candy lane lane. He came to confront us with how we live our lives, with what we're called to do and who we're called to be. And so number two is this, that Jesus said he wanted us to know that he came to challenge the status quo in our life, the things that we've always believed, the things that we, you know, and how we deal with each other and how we deal with disappointment, how we deal. It's just amazing over and over again how Jesus, he confronted those things in their culture that were the hard places and how they were mistreated by people in authority. He said, respond this way. How they were mistreated by people around them that took advantage of them. Respond this way. He never told us how to keep from being hurt. None of these things are a guarantee that we won't be disappointed or that there won't be wounds in our life. But to respond the way that he did, it won't keep us from pain, but it will keep us free. That we won't be chained forever in those things that have hurt us or wounded us or held on to us, that they lose the ability to influence and control our lives for the rest of our days. And so number two is this, he challenges status quo in our life. Let's go to this third one here and we'll close with this. Matthew 5:27. Again, he says, you've heard the commandment that says you must not commit adultery, but I say anyone who even looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So if your eye, even your good eye, causes you to lust, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your hand, even your stronger hand, causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. Now, you have to understand this. This is not a literal thing here. He's not telling you to mutilate your body to keep from sinning. He's trying to make a point in the value of how serious we have to confront sin in our life. Now this, you know, to have this conversation, and again, it's for all of us. Again, this is not me saying, hey, you really need to look at the sin in your life, because then you could go, what about you? Do you need to look at any sin in your life? Hey, you mind your own business. You know what I mean? And so this is about all of us, right? I mean, all of us have those things in our life. Again, that if Jesus were taking a walk with each one of us personally, there are things, and I know probably maybe all of them, there are things that he would talk to me about. You say, how do you know? Because he talks to me about them now. And sometimes when I think, okay, he hadn't spoken to me about that in a while, he brings it up again. Hey, you haven't done anything about this. Oh, you're still on that? And so in all of this, the thing that Jesus is saying that he wants us to know is that when you look at this, he wants us to confront the sin in our life. You know, we just, in our culture, that if we're not careful, in the church culture, we make, you know, I'm just so grateful for the grace of God. That because of the grace of God, Jesus didn't look at me and go, you're too bad to have a relationship with me. You may look good in the eyes of other people, but I know what goes on in your heart. I know who you are at your core. But he was like, I know all of that, but I still want you. I still want you. Jesus, thank you, man, for accepting me just as I am. I know, man, internally I'm a mess. And I know me. I can sometimes do the right thing for the wrong reason. And I know that matters. But he didn't say, well, now that you've received me, okay. He was like, you're mine now, and so I want to talk to you about what I've called you to, how I've called you to live. And I can just speak for me, it's an ongoing conversation. There's never a place where he goes, you're good. It's an ongoing conversation. And he deals with this, and he was pointing out right here that he takes it so seriously that he's like, man, if it's in your life, if you've got to remove it from your life, remove it from your life. Not literally cut your hand off, but put it out of your reach. Not literally pluck your eye out, but make sure that it's no longer in front of you. These things that we struggle with, you know what I mean? Like if you struggle with porn, don't pluck your eye out, but man, put fences around your life where that no longer is a part of your world because you've had to humble yourself and ask somebody, hey, help me in this area. It poisons my soul. It's toxic to it. And so many times I know in my own walk with the Lord, I had this thought of, God, I'm struggling with whatever this thing is. And just, I pray that you just take it away from me. When I found out, he never took it away from me. I had to surrender my life to him, and I had to make a decision that I'm going to do the things that are necessary to make sure that I don't keep yielding to this. I don't keep struggling with this. You don't have to turn there, but you can write this down. Hebrews 11, talking about Moses, says this: it was by faith that Moses, when he grew up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to share the oppression of God's people instead of enjoying the fleeting pleasures of sin. So he refused this and chose. Everybody say chose. He chose this. And it says the fleeting pleasures of sin. He was like, yes, I enjoy that. Yes, I like that. The appetites of my flesh want that. And he was like, well, you can have that. Or you can choose this. We hear the account of Jacob and Esau, and how Esau came in one day and he was so hungry, and he said, he asked for some stew that his brother was making. And his brother said, well, give me the birthright. And to us, we don't understand that much, but the birthright in their culture was a huge thing. It meant that they got more of the inheritance. It meant whenever God was going to speak to the family, that this was the person he was going to speak to regarding the family. And his brother was like, well, what good is my birthright, you know, if I die of starvation? And so he said, yeah, you can have it. Well, then later on when it mattered, Jacob remembered. And Esau made the same mistake that so many of us make, and that is that he sacrificed what he wanted most for what he wants now. And it's a huge price for us. Sometimes I've been Esau. I'm grateful for the grace of God that raises us up and forgives us and lets us walk again. I'm grateful for the patience of God. If he wasn't patient, I wouldn't be up here today. He's been so patient with me. But I have to recognize also that he's called me to this, and that he takes the sin in my life. It's a serious thing to him. If he was walking with me, he would say, I'm not okay with this. And so as we look at our life and we recognize that Jesus wants us to confront the sin in our life to a point that we put it out of our reach. We don't set it in front of our eyes. We make hard decisions to separate ourselves from it. Because he's called us to more. It's not because he's a prude. It's not because he doesn't want you to have a good time. But it's because he knows who you are and what you were made to do. He knows who I am and what I was made to do. He knows who we are and what we were made to do. And that the way that we recognize that in its fullest, if we give our lives to him, is to walk with him closely. And yes, we'll still fall. Yes, we'll still make mistakes, bad choices. We'll have bad days. But the key to that is in those moments that we get back up with the grace of God. Proverbs says this, it says that the righteous may fall, but they get back up seven times. It says the ungodly fall and they're utterly destroyed or cast down. And the difference between the righteous and those that weren't righteous was not whether or not they fell. They both fell. The difference was the response to when they fell, and the righteous, when they fall, that they get back up. And so as we confront the sin of our life, part of that is the getting back up. But part of it, again, in the getting back up is saying, I'm not called to this. And so me waiting on God to just say, okay, that's no longer in your life, we're going to miss it. We're going to be bound by that for the rest of our life. But when I'm so serious about my sin that I'm like, I'm not doing that anymore, and here are the things I'm going to do to put up fences in my life to make sure that it no longer has access to me, and I'm going to continue to grow in my relationship with God, it's amazing we begin to experience real freedom. And so Jesus, in this Matthew 5, as he starts out in the Sermon on the Mount, he's saying to all these people that have followed him, that have shown up because they've seen great things, if you really want to follow me, here are the things you're going to experience. People are going to say things about you. It's going to feel unfair. It's not true. as you follow me, as you do things for me. I remember we built a youth facility in Clovis. I was doing student ministry, and it was kind of like that. It started out really small, and nobody cared when we had 20 kids showing up. They didn't give a rip about who we were or what was going on. But the minute we had 300 kids, all of a sudden we were in everybody's radar, including some people that in religious areas that in their own insecurities out of fear would be hugely critical. And on the one hand, I was too sensitive to it. My feelings would get too hurt. I was too soft. And God used it to grow me. And I needed to grow in that area, still do. And people were like, well, you know, they're just reaching a lot of kids. You know, just want a bunch of kids there. Well, yeah, we did want a bunch of kids there. Why is that? Yes, of course. It's like my wife said, you just want people to like you. I'm like, well, yeah. I mean, what's the alternative is I don't want them to like me. Hey, I don't want you not to like me. Well, you're doing a good job of it. I mean, you know, but the reason is so that we could impact them with the gospel. And in time, it had an impact. There were teenagers that were, drug and alcohol problems were getting smaller in our area because of the impact that God was allowing us to have in kids' lives. There were fewer suicides. There's less teen pregnancies. There were just all of these things taking place in their life. As a result of having an encounter with Jesus, there were real measurable things that were different. And we experience those things, again, not because we're perfect. It's the grace of God, the calling of God. But there is something about walking in our calling as believers. And I'm not talking about being up here speaking. This is the easy part. Some people think they'll like me because they hear me speak and then they hang out with me and like, yeah, I don't really like you. I get that a lot. Just that thing, that awareness of who God has called us to be, who he's called us to be. And part of that, when Jesus comes along with us, he wants to talk about the hidden stuff in our life. I've said this before, but it's good for me to hear it. So I want to say to you, it's probably good for both of us to hear it. All of us have three lives, our public life. That's the life that everybody sees. Our private life, that's the life that those around us see. They know more about us than the people in our public lives, know more some of our struggles. But then all of us have a secret life. And that's the life that only Jesus and you see, Jesus and I see about my life. And I found that I've had the most peace with God whenever my secret life and my public life look the same. I have the most chaos and the most conviction, and I feel the most unworthiness when my public life looks like one thing, but my secret life is another. So Jesus has called us in all of this to confront those things in our life and to say, look, I'm going to keep that out of my reach. I'm going to put whatever I need to between me and that so it's no longer an issue in my life. If it means I've got to change who I hang out with, then so be it. I'm not going to put that in front of my eyes again. If it means I got to cancel some subscriptions, make somebody aware, make sure they get everything that comes to me, so be it. Because this is not a small thing in who God has called me to be. Man, Pastor Rick, this is kind of rugged. If I didn't know you were going to talk about this, I wouldn't have come to church. I get it. I almost thought about staying home too, so I understand that. But it's something God's called us to, right? I mean, it's who Jesus has called us to be as we walk that direction. I want you to bow your heads and close your eyes for just a minute. I'm just grateful for the Lord and for his grace and his goodness. I'm grateful for what he wants to do, but I just want to, as I began this saying, imagine that he was taking a walk with us personally and talking to us about that. I'm going to be quiet here in just a moment, and when I do, to let you just there in your own heart, in that secret place that Psalm 91 talks about, he that dwells in the secret place of the Most High, that secret place between you and God, that he has this conversation with you and with me, with us this morning. Privately, secretly. Lord, thank you for being here. Man, we're yours, Jesus. We've been bought by you. We've been redeemed by you. This community recognizes in all of our differences, we have a recognition of who you are and who you are to us. And so that brings us together. So Lord, if we take just a moment for you to speak into each and every heart, we thank you for that in Jesus' name. Let's just spend a moment with God.